Welcome to Culture Unfit. My name is Nikia Riviak, and if you've ever felt constrained by culture's expectations of who you should be, what you should do, or what constitutes good, bad, or ugly while showing up in the workplace, then this podcast is for you. Welcome, my beautiful misfits. Welcome to episode 5 of Culture Unfit. In today's episode, we hear from a beautiful misfit from the Caribbean who shares a story that reflects some cultural norms in the Caribbean that are restricting her right to express herself in ways that represent her individual identity. She also brings in examples of perhaps antiquated views on how you should be dressing, how you should be presenting your hair in very corporate settings in the Caribbean. And I will try, as I always do, to provide my reflections on how I might handle that situation, recognizing that the entire culture, this is not just a company's culture, but the culture at large, which then infiltrates the company's culture, may not be as ready for the change that she wants to see. And so how does one navigate that space where it's not just the company's culture, but you're actually living within a society that has certain norms and mores that may need some evolution? And without further ado, let's take a listen.
Someone at my workplace once commented that I could never look professional and attain upward mobility by wearing loud colors at work. I have always felt that as a Caribbean people, we are made to tone down our sense of style to fit in with the workplace culture. As a Caribbean woman, and I'm from Trinidad and Tobago, where we are such creative geniuses. As you say, Nakia, you see yourself as a creative Caribbean butterfly. And for me, bright colors have always been a part of my personality. I love pinks, and as cliche as that sounds, that has always been something unique to me. And bold colors can be just as appropriate as somber colors. I work in the energy sector, and while I will say that my workplace has not been overly restrictive and quick to police employees based on dress code policies, I am aware of very strict corporate attire policies that some organizations in other more traditional sectors especially have, which all seems very hinged on Eurocentric standards. I have had friends who could not wear dresses to work without stockings to accompany them, or who could not wear flat shoes to work, only heeled shoes were allowed in the office, or where curly hair or other natural styles are not considered professional. Funky haircuts and, of course, colored hair are a definite no-no. So what happens to people, and I have definitely experienced this in the past myself, is that we operate throughout our entire careers in a toned down version of ourselves. Our uniqueness is muted. And a secondary point I want to add is that Trinidad is located 10.5 degrees north of the equator. And so it goes without saying that it is a very hot country. Why then are we still stuck in a mold of having to don fully lined suits? I do acknowledge that there has been improvements over the years. I have seen Jamaica taking steps to change workplace dress codes. And of course, there's been a whole natural hair movement within the last couple years. However, we are still steeped heavily in these archaic standards of conformity. Nakia, my question is, what advice do you have for someone like me working in the corporate world in Trinidad and by extension the entire Caribbean to maintain personal identity and cultural connection over corporate culture?
Phew. As a Caribbean woman myself and a woman of Trinidad and Tobago, This one hit different, as they say. You know, I grew up in Trinidad and left at 18. And so I did not have a chance to work in Trinidad as an adult. And so I have to put that disclaimer out there because I am going to be digging into this from a perspective of having that relevance, that relatability to the story, but not entirely, not completely. But wow, incredibly delivered story. I just have to point that out. Such eloquence and clarity, and I just really appreciate the thoughtfulness that went into sharing that story. And you've heard this beautiful misfit share a couple of things underlying this story of having received feedback and knowing people who've had this feedback around. And it's not even feedback, it's just written into the dress code, the policy of the company. So it's not it's actually not something, you know, coming directly at people consistently by individuals. And so there are two things. One, it's this idea that there is a creativity and a vibrance and a life in the Caribbean culture that people express in what they wear, except within corporate environments that say, actually, no, you need to wear something completely different. That's one theme. I think the other one is just interestingly, it might be a holdover from colonial times where, you know, we had another country's view of what appropriate looked like handed down to us during these colonial times. And despite the fact that the countries are warm, still have to maintain that look. And this I know, right? Like when I return home to Trinidad on a very, very hot day, you will find people, office workers, coming out not just with, you know, thick lined suits, but tights. Like I've seen this in the banks, etc. And, you know, I do think that in certain institutions, it's important that there's a uniform, but perhaps there are elements of the uniform that need to evolve with the times, right? So, for example, there was a point when women across the globe, at least in more Western societies, were not allowed to wear pants, right? Like, not necessarily not allowed, but like it was not part of the fashion back then. And that has evolved, right? You can show up in an office or in any space wearing a skirt, a dress, or pants. So, you know, there's that evolution. So there's a lot to unpack within those two themes. But I think the biggest thing that I'm going to offer up is that this is a case not just of rigidity in cultural expectations within a workplace, but it is bigger than that. It's country level. For that reason, what I'm going to talk about is beyond what this person might do within the company. It's a little bit trickier of a situation when you have that dynamic. I'm going to be sharing four tips that I think can help move the conversation here forward in a positive and constructive and safe way. I'll tell you what they are now, and then I will go through each of them in more detail. Number one, model the change you want to see. Two, you're never really alone in matters of change. Three, there is power in community. Four, start a movement. So, one is modeling the change you want to see. In this situation of cultural norm sort of oppressing or leaving a very heavy mark in corporate culture and then trickling that down all the way through to how you dress, a very deeply personal thing that is both personal and a reflection of your identity, but also when you're working in a particular space. If you're a doctor, you wear a doctor's coat. If you are a fireman, you wear a fireman's uniform. If you're in a bank or in a highly corporate culture, you need to wear what is appropriate. But this is about the expression of identity through color. And the opportunity to even challenge some of the fashion that is appropriate or deemed appropriate workplace policy, particularly if you're a woman. Everything from wearing heels and having to wear stockings or leggings underneath your dress. In a situation like this, if you are saying, you know what, why does it have to be this way? There is an opportunity to evolve. You're already starting to question. The thing that I would encourage you to do is to model the change you want to see in safe ways. So that looks like putting on that pink dress, that bright red lipstick, and seeing what happens. Now, you have to feel safe and comfortable doing that. However, the reason why I'm recommending this is that sometimes there is a sensation, there's a feeling around what might happen if you do something, but it's not actually explicit. I think there is the opportunity to test the waters if you are feeling courageous enough. And honestly, that's how sometimes change starts to happen. You see it on the playground with kids, right? One kid goes off and finds something that kind of is interesting that nobody was paying attention to, that or may have felt kind of scary, and then you see them start to follow. So I wonder if the threat is really as significant as it may feel. And I would encourage anybody who's listening who's like, I am in a similar space, and it's not like we have a uniform at work, but there's been subtle cues over my time working here that certain dress is not allowed. I don't see the women who are more senior than me doing this, and so I just assume that this is the way it needs to be. And I'd shared an episode for an example of how I did that when I started working in a very corporate American environment. It wasn't that there was an explicit dress code. I mean, there might have been some language when I signed my employment contract, but I don't recall it being super explicit. But when you're young, you look to the people above you and you look around you. And if there's no sign that there's another way to do it, you assume that that is the norm. That's really what culture is often made of when it's not explicit. It's just what behaviors are around you and what are the things that you can observe. And so the reason why I was like, I'm not going to get a suit, part of it was it didn't fit my personality and my identity. And the other part of it was because I couldn't afford it. But I found a way to, I guess, flex my style in a way that was still respectful for the culture. And I don't know if I was a catalyst for more change, but I do think that if you do it and there isn't a repercussion and your work is stellar and, you know, you continue to be amazing, then that's like a little nudge in one direction. Number two, as I said before, is you're never really alone in matters of change. And it's somewhat self-explanatory. Oftentimes we're like, okay, this I feel this way. And, you know, it's a deeply personal thing to us. But you turn to your colleague or your good friend and over lunch bring this up. And then there's agreement all of a sudden in this discussion. And there's this sense of, oh, I also feel that way. You know, I'm also sort of, you know, confused about like why we continue to have this particular standard of dress. And I think therein lies an opportunity for even more safety and more comfort if you can get a friend or a colleague that you're close with to be in on this. You started by asking the question and then found somebody else who was asking the same question. And rather than leave it alone and use that friendship to sort of work through the discomfort of just having to fully acquiesce, you can use this person as an ally in starting to make those small changes. And again, have fun with it, see what happens. And the goal here is not to create a ruckus. It's to find that way of saying, yep, I get the environment I found myself in. It is what it is. And it's going to take a lot to change it. But like, I still want to bring a little bit of creativity and boldness to the way that I show up, to the way that I dress. And that takes us to number three. There is power in community. And I'm excited about this because I am recognizing how beneficial it is to extend beyond yourself and all matters, from raising a kid to moving to a new country to trying to figure out how to show up at work or move up the career ladder. There's tremendous power in finding allies and other people who are like-minded and trying to tackle the same problem. And I think in this situation, just we're moving almost as if we're looking at a circle that is you, and then the outer circle beyond that is your friend. There's one more circle that's community, and then there's a bigger one that I think I'll talk about after this. Yes, I will. And this notion of community is really saying, okay, what is it that I can do to understand whether it's not just me, it's not just like my friend, but, you know, are there other women, let's zero it into women, who are feeling similarly? And, you know, I would ask, is there a woman's employee group in the office that brings together the woman in the office? And, you know, it's often a space to talk about the challenges and the opportunities that are unique to us. And if there isn't one, can you start one? And is that something that is encouraged by your employer? And maybe it's super informal at first, right? Like clubs that start when we're in elementary school and in high school. Once you have that first conversation with the friend, the close colleague, and then other people start to come in, maybe through word of mouth saying, oh my God, like, you know, this is great. The questions and the things that you bring up organically, I'm sure will be rich. But in this particular situation where it's about your ability to express your identity, your love of bold colors, etc., there could be a moment of recognition that more and more women who are part of this little informal group are feeling the same strain, the same tension. And the conversation can evolve pretty nicely into the question of, well, what do we do about it? If all of us are feeling this way, and, you know, we represent a significant part of the employee workforce, maybe we can formalize this and in a proposal to management, have a dialogue. And of course, what you do, whether it's a proposal to management or a conversation with one person who's super senior, those tactics are fully dependent on your understanding of the environment you find yourself in. For some, it's going to be perhaps a more personal conversation with a higher up. And for others, it might have to be more formal. So I can't dictate that. But the idea here is leveraging the power of the collective within your workplace and doing so in a way that's safe, so that you're saying, look, you know, we're just going to meet for lunch. Or, you know, there's technology that also allows people to meet virtually. And it can be as organic as that to start creating some change. And I think that if there's one message I want to leave as we close this third point, it does not have to be so significant to start something within your company. Like it often feels bigger. And I think there are some individuals who are naturally inclined to starting things, whether it's like, we're going to have a meetup every Monday at this place and just hang out. But I think on issues of corporate change or things that you feel like perhaps are impeding employees' ability to show up fully and therefore be as productive as they can be, it often just takes one person to send out a lunch invitation and then it starts. So that's the third point. The fourth and final point, which is a very provocative one, is to start a movement. And it feels big because the word movement inside of it implies something monumental. But where I'm going with it is that once the ball starts to roll within your company, I wonder if there are other companies, let's take Trinidad and Tobago, for example, in which the dynamic is very similar. Hyper corporate, some, you know, as our beautiful Misfit said, archaic standards of conformity when it comes to the dress code. And there is similar bubbling up of conversation happening. And maybe in other companies, there are these resourced employee groups dedicated to particular dimensions and groups within the population of the workforce there. And if there is, then perhaps this is a bigger conversation. You know, there are many, many issues that are hotly debated because they affect the well-being of a people, of a country. And workplace issues tend to fall kind of further down. And I think that I see an opportunity. And we know from the Beautiful Misfit story that there's certainly been change in Jamaica to try and have this conversation happen on a broader scale and to use the power of the collective and the bigger community, not just within your company, but perhaps in other companies that are facing similar challenges, to begin to at least make some noise. And the making noise doesn't have to be, all right, we're striking and, you know, or we're going to petition or we're going to like march. It's not that severe yet, but, you know, with a bunch of smart people having conversation around, like, what do we do here? Is there something that we want to produce here? Like a, you know, video that sort of talks about like what we want to see, or, you know, are there proposals that we want to put in place? Like, what is it that we want to do? I think there'll be many, many ideas that come of it. And potentially, and this is not something that happens overnight, but potentially in a few years, we might see more meaningful steps towards change. Now, what I've described for you in this episode is hopefully a set of things that can happen safely and incrementally. So not all at once, but one at a time, starting with yourself and really just trying to figure out the right balance of where do I want to express it? Is it like a pop of color with my blouse? Is it a, and just try it out to understand how much of these workplace policies are indeed a little bit flexible. And, you know, I always say this, I think it's been a pattern in the episodes. If there's a person that you could talk to, an individual who perhaps has had a word or two to say about somebody who has come in with bright colors, oh my goodness, like, well, look at her, whatever the comment is, and at least say, well, you know, hey, like, what's wrong with that? And have a one-to-one conversation. You should always jump on those, right? And I know it's very terrifying sometimes to approach these conversations, but change also happens one conversation at a time. So I'm going to end today's episode, and I hope that you found it enjoyable. I hope that it piqued or created some nuggets or neurological firings in your brain today. And maybe there are some things that I offered up that you hadn't thought of. Maybe there are things that I haven't and you want to share. So please let me know at Culture Unfit at Twitter or on Instagram. And then, of course, I'm welcoming stories in voice note format. So feel free to email your story, 2 minutes or so of talking, to cultureunfit@gmail.com, or you could, you know, send it via DM on Instagram or Twitter. Either way, we welcome you. So thank you, and I wish you nothing but the best, my beautiful misfits. Till next time.